North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Cover story this week, No Ceiling. Despite a worsening capital environment for women entrepreneurs, local owners find new ways to grow. Before we get to the cover story, we'll read the biz section and the reporter pages. Biz is compiled by managing editor Dane Huffman. Military town is changing its image. An eastern North Carolina town known for its ties to the Marine Corps is seeing a surprising resurgence. Jacksonville has been home to Camp Lejeune since 1941, and the base has about 33,000 active military. Jacksonville, with a population of 72,000, has long been the home to the used car lots, seedy bars, and uninspiring downtowns common in military towns. But last year, Site Selection magazine named Jacksonville number 22 in the U.S. for best small cities for small businesses. Jacksonville was the only North Carolina city in the top 50. We're trying to make this downtown a better place to do business, City Manager Joshua Ray says. Surging interest in Onslow County, which hugs the Atlantic Ocean and includes Swansboro and North Topsail Island, has helped. But Jacksonville has been intentional about its growth, rebuilding and beautifying downtown. That includes a new city hall and working with the Marines to create monuments and garden areas. Ray says Jacksonville is about to open a new teen center and is working on streetscapes and improved stormwater management for downtown. Downtown historically had a totally different atmosphere to it, Ray says. Since then, the focus has been to beautify the downtown corridor and put an emphasis on this area as being a connection with the U.S. Marine Corps, he says. Ray says the city has streamlined ways to help businesses launch, such as not requiring parking and even hiring an architect to advise entrepreneurs. All that has helped new businesses downtown, such as the Clove Hitch Beer Company, which a local couple opened in 2023. I can tell you a lot of it goes back to having pro-business zoning and city codes on the books to not have the regulations and restrictions, Ray says. In Mount Airy, they're adding an upscale hotel. A Mount Airy building that dates to 1892 is being turned into a boutique hotel. The Sparger building is set to become the Balladeer Hotel under the Tribute Portfolio brand, Marriott International's collection of boutique hotels. The Surry County town sees millions in visitor spending each year, with tourists coming to see the real-life Mayberry from the Andy Griffith Show. The Balladeer will pay homage to Griffith, along with music styles originating in Mount Airy and the local granite quarry and textile mills. The hotel is expected to open in 2026 as part of the Spencer's Mill redevelopment site downtown. Srikanth and Sri Kama of Sunhouse Hospitality own the property and are renovating the building. A balladeer is a person who is dedicated to their craft and who tells the stories of a place, Srikanth Kama says. We are excited to create an experience that is anchored in Mount Airy's past and future. MERS Aesthetics lands Demi Lovato. A Raleigh company has landed Demi Lovato to promote one of its key products. MERS Aesthetics says the 31-year-old Lovato will be its brand partner for Xeomin, an anti-wrinkle injection approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to improve the appearance of frown lines. MERS says it's an extension of its Beauty on Your Terms campaign, and Patrick Urban, the MERS Aesthetics president for North America, praises Lovato as a tireless advocate for self-care who has empowered everyone to live authentically across every aspect of their lives. A new study says the East Coast is slowly sinking. A fascinating new study highlights a crisis happening in slow motion. The study using satellite-based research reveals that much of the East Coast, including parts of coastal North Carolina, is literally slumping into the ocean, as the New York Times describes it. Researchers from Virginia Tech and the U.S. Geological Survey looked at satellite data to determine where and at what rate local subsidence is happening. Because the rate of sinking is so small, measured in millimeters and centimeters per decade in places such as Wilmington and the Outer Banks, the long-term impacts may seem distant. But as the researchers point out, millions of people and billions worth of property are impacted. You have a hazard that is becoming worse every day with sea level rise, lead author Leonard Owenan, a PhD candidate at Virginia Tech, told the Times. So how much are beach homes going for these days? Raleigh firm lands big deal with NC State. When a small company scores a relevant deal with a big institution, chances are the operators plan aggressive growth. That's what happened to Raleigh's Solito after NC State University named it one of the two preferred providers with spectrum of dedicated internet access to non-university businesses at Centennial Campus. The contract is for 3 years with 2 one-year renewal options. As the founder of Solito while I was at NC State in July of 1999, this partnership feels like an exciting full-circle moment for me, says President Shagrat Nagaraj. Solito recently sold to MC Partners, a private equity firm out of Boston. Mike Tarrant, the vice president of sales and marketing, says the company tallied about $8 million in sales in the past 12 months and employs 28 full-time workers. And finally, in leasing, Kane Realty adds new office tenants. Kane Realty signed 3 new office tenants at the offices in North Hills. Broad Oak Capital Partners is new to the Raleigh market, being based in Bethesda, Maryland. The boutique financial institution has a life sciences focus. C. Cliff Consulting of Raleigh moved its Raleigh offices and is a business analytics consulting firm. BDI Partners, headquartered in Raleigh, is a lower middle market investment firm that moved its headquarters to North Hills. All cited North Hills Energy and broad range of offerings as reasons for choosing to open offices there. The Tech and Startups page is written by Lauren Onasorge. Her top story, Small Town Scramble as 540 Approaches. If all goes as expected, complete 540 could open within 4 years, connecting the area south and east of Raleigh. But the timeline is putting pressure on communities to ensure secondary roads can handle the increased traffic. Johnston County, for example, has submitted multiple road projects to be considered for funding from the North Carolina Department of Transportation, but nothing is certain when it comes to those allocations. We're already seeing some volumes on roads that are going to be exacerbated by 540, says Braston Newton, Johnston County Planning Director. An NCDOT spokesperson says the deadline for its next prioritization budget was October, and that after public comment periods, a draft will be published in 2025, unveiling which projects made the final cut. But Johnston County is not sitting still. The county recently teamed up with engineering firm McAdams to revamp its comprehensive transportation plan, which had not been updated in about a decade. McAdams, which won a contract worth more than $200,000 to assist with the effort, is helping the county identify potential trouble spots as part of that plan. The first stakeholder meeting happens this month, and a public hearing has yet to be held. But as the complete 540 plan inches closer to becoming a reality, officials say there's no time to lose. The comprehensive transportation plan looks at the entire county, but special attention is being paid to corridors expected to be impacted by the project and the widening of Interstate 40. Raleigh sees rising number for rail traffic. More people are traveling via train, leading to record numbers of travelers in North Carolina and Virginia, as officials plan $1 billion in improvements in the Triangle. More than 641,000 passengers traveled on North Carolina's passenger rail service last year, which was up 23% from 2022. According to Amtrak, the top 5 stations in the Southeast in 2023 were Staple Mills Road Station in Richmond, Virginia, which had 424,617 passengers. Alexandria, Virginia, which had 327,285 passengers. Charlotte, which had 281,220 passengers. Norfolk, Virginia, 232,530 passengers. And Raleigh, with 231,229 passengers. The stakes for those stations, particularly in Raleigh, are about to increase. That's because last year the North Carolina Department of Transportation secured $1.1 billion in federal funding for new rail lines between Raleigh and Wake Forest, the first section of an ambitious project to reduce travel times between Raleigh and Richmond. Once the entire project is complete, the new passenger rail service will save more than an hour of travel time between the two cities and make the trip to Washington, D.C. car competitive, according to NCDOT. Improvements to Oberlin Road in Raleigh are nearly complete. Change is coming to Oberlin Road in Raleigh to make the community more walkable as new developments reshape the area. Think wider sidewalks, revised traffic lanes, bus stops, and landscaping. It's all part of a $6.1 million effort that is also intended to commemorate the historic Oberlin Village using art. The Oberlin neighborhood is becoming a hotspot for development, evidenced by Budley East, but it used to be the site of the historic village described by the Friends of Oberlin Village as a group of antebellum free black enclave that grew into an African-American municipality built away from white supervision by former slaves freed during or after the Civil War. The city plans to tell its story while improving multimodal traffic in the corridor. Crews have been working along Oberlin Road between Groveland Avenue and Robert Street since October. J. Kumar Shah, senior project manager with the city, says it's 60% complete. If all goes as planned, the project designed by Clark Nexon will be finished before the fall. It includes sewer work to the widened sidewalks. Most of the utilities aspect of the revamp is complete, Shah says. It also includes a public art component. Artist Chandra Cox, head of the Department of Art and Design at NC State University, is working with the living ancestors of Oberlin Village to tell the story of the community. And finally, Spirit shrinks its RDU presence. One of Raleigh-Durham International Airport's low-cost carriers has suspended another nonstop flight. Spirit Airlines has been shrinking its RDU presence in recent months. Recently, the airline quietly pulled out of its RDU Orlando service. Spirit launched at RDU in 2019 with seven nonstop flights and growth ambitions. Today, the airline appears to fly one route regularly out of RDU to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Spirit started the route last year. Zach Ezone writes the Healthcare and Higher Ed column, or section. His top story, Syneos drops hiring goals set in 2016 deal. Syneos Health has exited a 2016 incentives agreement with the state of North Carolina tied to the company's local expansion. The state's Economic Investment Committee voted February 27th to terminate a job development investment grant agreement with Syneos at the request of the company. Syneos in August informed the committee, part of the State Department of Commerce, of its decision to terminate the agreement. In a letter to the committee, Syneos Chief Accounting Officer Donna Kralowitz said, due to unforeseen changes in market conditions and most notably the evolution of the work-from-home landscape, we have had to reevaluate our ability to meet our requirements as initially agreed to in our JDIG agreement. Syneos did not return a request to comment on its decision. The move comes months after the previously public company based in Morrisville was taken private by a group of private investment firms amid financial headwinds. The transaction, valued around $7.1 billion, closed in late September. Shortly after the deal closed, Syneos appointed Colin Shannon as CEO. The deal announced in May came as Syneos struggled to secure new business on the clinical side of its operations. After hitting revenue of about $5.4 billion in 2022, Syneos, as of early 2023, expected its annual revenue to drop between 4% to 7.8%. The company, at the end of 2022, had 2,177 employees who qualified under the JDIG agreement, working either at its Morrisville headquarters or remotely in North Carolina. That number dropped to 2,077 by the end of June 23, which was primarily due to organic attrition, Kralowitz said in the letter. The company in 2016, in its former iteration as Inc. Research, announced plans to move its headquarters from Raleigh to Morrisville and create about 500 new jobs. The company was eligible to receive $8.4 million in JDIG funds contingent on hiring goals over an eight-year period. The Economic Investment Committee on February 27th approved two payments to Syneos linked to milestones the company had already met for 2018 and 2019, totaling $325,500 and $548,536, respectively. Syneos leases a 258,250-square-foot building and perimeter park built to serve as its global headquarters. The lease runs through 2032. The cost to attend Duke University tops $85,000. Duke University is increasing tuition for undergraduate students by 4.4%, and tuition and fees for graduate and professional schools by up to 5%. The Board of Trustees approved rates for the 2024-2025 academic year during its recent quarterly meeting. A year ago, the Board approved a 4.9% tuition increase for undergraduate students. Undergraduates will now pay $66,325 for tuition, with total costs rising to $86,886. Duke says more than half of its undergraduates received a form of financial assistance. Last year, Duke announced it would provide full tuition for students from North and South Carolina whose household incomes are $150,000 or less. Durham gene editing firm is raising $40 million. A Durham biotech is raising capital for its gene editing programs amid a wave of challenges impacting the industry. Precision Biosciences is raising $40 million in an underwritten public offering that includes participation from multiple life sciences investors. Proceeds from the offering will support the company's research and development efforts in addition to general corporate purposes and providing working capital. Precision Bio is selling 2.5 million shares and warrants to purchase up to 2.5 million shares at a combined price of $16 a share. The warrants have an exercise price of $20 per share and will expire 5 years after their exercise date, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Additionally, the offering's underwriter has a 30-day option to purchase up to 375,000 shares and warrants to purchase up to 375,000 shares at the combined public offering price. Laura Brummett is the writer of the retail and restaurants section. Boxyard RTP adds 4 retail tenants. Boxyard RTP, the mixed-use project made from shipping containers located inside Research Triangle Park, has new tenants. The development's tenant lineup includes food and beverage spots, stores, and retail services. Of its 15 spaces, 14 are now filled, a spokesperson says. New Wave Capital Suites, a full-service barber lounge, is one of 4 companies joining Boxyard and RTP. The barber suite will offer haircuts, neck shaves, facial massages, and shampoos. The company launched in 2019 as an all-natural men's hair care line. Research Triangle Park holds a special place in my heart, says owner Krishna Cuffey, owner of New Wave Capital Suites. It's where our brand originated, driven by the goal to craft handmade hair care products that enhance your hair's natural qualities rather than simply treating it. The Research Triangle Foundation, the developer of RTP, also announced the third group of Boxyard RTP's Pop Box program, a partnership with the NC IDEA that offers grants and retail space to small businesses. The newest group features Gold Clover Company, One Blossom, Two Bloom Floral Design, and Disco Differences. Pop Box participants get to use a 320-square-foot space inside a Boxyard RTP as a pop-up shop. The current group of businesses will each receive a $6,750 grant. The program also provides professional services and counseling through Durham Technical Community College. Gold Clover Company is owned by Layla Christie and handcrafts 14-karat gold-filled jewelry, including gemstone necklaces, bracelets, and earrings. One Blossom, Two Bloom Floral Design is owned by Adana Omeni. The florist works with local farmers to create floral designs with local blooms, wildflowers, and seasonal greenery. Disco Differences is a vintage and secondhand store owned by Emily Wall and Megan Snow. The business is aiming to create a community for individuals with disabilities. The Pop Box program started in 2021 as a way to combat challenges small businesses face during the pandemic. So far, the program has facilitated the entry of 7 small businesses into the market. Crabtree Mall brings in 3 new stores. Crabtree Mall has 3 new stores, Runway Brides, Lip Print Beauty Bar, and Eloise Collections. The mall has more than 200 stores with just a few empty spaces, according to its management company, Pacific Retail Capital Partners. Runway Brides is owned by Danielle Robinson and sells a curation of wedding dresses from around the world. Prices range from $1,500 to $3,900, according to its website. Lip Print Beauty Bar was previously located in Glenwood South. The studio lets customers create custom lipstick and lip gloss shades, as well as body butter. And Eloise Collections is a jewelry and accessory store owned by Cecilia and Cheng Wang. New Advance Auto CEO plans more cost cuts. Raleigh's slumping Advance Auto Parts once again reported disappointing performance figures recently, but the new CEO and chief financial officer are promising a quick turnaround. The February 28th earnings call suggested that the tide could be turning despite missing estimates for its 2023 results. CEO Shane O'Kelly and CFO Ryan Grimsland, both newcomers, outlined actions Advance Auto is taking to fix its current position. O'Kelly plans to sell Advance's WorldPAC and Canadian business units, consolidate the supply chain to a single unified network, cut costs, including eliminating positions and cutting indirect spending by $15 million annually, streamline leadership structures and hiring for key positions, and improve the productivity of stores and reduce the number of stores openings this year. Ben Tobin is the author of the Greater Triangle Growth section. His top story this week, Rocky Mount buys land tied to casinos. Rocky Mount has kicked off its strategy to acquire more than 300 acres that was previously linked to plans for a casino. The city purchased roughly 42 acres off the intersection of Old Carriage Road and Sunset Boulevard for $4 million in February, according to Nash County deed records. The land sits by the intersections of U.S. 64 and Interstate 95, about 8 miles west of downtown Rocky Mount. Rocky Mount City Manager Keith Rogers, Jr. says the acquisition is part of the city's plan to acquire roughly 336 acres for an investment in our economic future. The Rocky Mount City Council authorized the city to purchase this land for roughly $15.2 million at the end of last year, according to the Rocky Mount Telegram. That area has often been a site that people have had an eye on for developing, Rogers says. So when the opportunity came up for the city to acquire those parcels, we thought that it would be in the best economic interest of the city to make such an investment. We don't really have a specific desire or vision for the site, but we believe that it could be an economic hub. The land had been flagged as the site for a potential casino. Last year, state lawmakers were pushing a proposal that would allow three casinos to operate in the state, including one in Nash County, but the bill faced resistance and was ultimately shelved. When asked if the land could still be used for a casino, Rogers says, commercial casinos are still not lawful in North Carolina, so that's not necessarily something that we can speak to. Rogers says the city plans to close on the remaining land next month. In Nash County, Dollar General developer adds land for $1 million. A developer from Birmingham, Alabama, that's behind hundreds of Dollar General stores in the United States, has scooped up more land in eastern North Carolina, this time in Nash County. Capital Growth Bookalter, which had been busy buying land in Johnston County, purchased more than 6 acres near the intersection of Interstate 95 and U.S. 64 for roughly $6 million in February, according to Nash County records. Buying the land was Rocky Mount WW and LLC tied to Capital Growth Bookalter. The land, located off North Winstead Avenue, was purchased for roughly $1 million per acre. Representatives of the company did not respond to requests seeking comment. This purchase comes after Capital Growth Bookalter made several investments in Red Hot Johnston County. In Granville County, health system expands north of Durham. A health system is expanding in Oxford. The Granville Health System, which is owned by the Granville County government, purchased a former medical center on more than 1.26 acres at 625 Lewis Street for $2.5 million this month, according to county property records. The health system offers services throughout Granville County, including a 62-bed hospital at 1010 College Street in Oxford. Adam McConnell, CEO of Granville Health System, says that the medical office will be used for gastroenterology and that the city will employ an additional 5 to 6 full-time employees when it is fully operational. Turning now to the real estate section, which is written by Kaylee Thompson. Durham approves apartments and homes. Increased housing density is coming to Durham after two separate developments received approval to move forward. The Durham City Council approved two zoning map changes recently for projects that could bring more than 700 residential units to the city. Mill Creek Residential won its rezoning to allow for a townhome and duplex community on Olive Branch Road in East Durham. Trinsic Residential was approved for its multifamily development, Aura Green Hill, on Hillsborough Road near Hillendale Golf Course and Interstate 85. After much discussion and opposition from both council members and residents, the council passed the rezoning for Olive Branch Reserve North 4-2, with council members Nate Baker and Chelsea Cook opposed. The new zoning is planned development residential, which will allow for more density and different housing types. The former zoning was residential rural. The new zoning will allow for up to 280 townhomes and duplexes. Mill Creek Residential is planning to build 268 market-rate units and 17 affordable units. The affordable units will be for those making 80 and 100% of the area median income for 30 years. The zoning is for 87 acres on 10 parcels. Because of a 300-foot wildlife corridor, only 48 acres can be developed. The Planning Commission had recommended denial 10-0. Concerns expressed by council members and residents included the impact on the Martin branch of Lick Creek, traffic congestion, infrastructure issues, and lack of services to the growing area. Mill Creek Residential will be constructing turn lanes along with a continuous three-lane cross-section on Olive Branch Road between the community's two access points. As for Aura Green Hill, Trinsic Residential received unanimous council approval. The new zoning is planned development residential with a textual development plan. The previous zoning was planned development residential and industrial light. It allows for up to 440 units, of which the developer is planning 398 apartments and 42 townhomes. Nearly 40 will be offered for those making 60, 80, and 100% of the area median income. Part of the site was approved for rezoning in January 2023, but the developer decided to buy two adjoining parcels that hold a Motel 6 and Days Inn to add more units to its development. Cary is named the best city in the U.S. for renters. People looking to rent in Wake County should set their sights on Cary, a new study says. A USA Today report on the best cities to rent in the U.S. ranks 315 cities, and Cary comes out as number one. Cary received the ranking due to financial accessibility, low crime, and good schools. Cary hit the top five in each category USA Today researched. It was named the best city for renting families, second for pet owners who rent, and fourth for single renters. The median rent in Cary is $1,719, while annual renter income is $73,872, according to data from Zillow and the U.S. Census Bureau. To determine affordability, USA Today looked at the percentage of rent-burdened residents, those spending more than 30% of income on rent, alongside typical rent prices. And in Wendell is to add homes in the low 400,000s. A Wake County town that's been hot with residential development is getting even more homes. Davidson Homes of Alabama is building a 110-home community named Wendell Ridge on 41 acres off Eagle Rock Road southeast of Wendell Falls. The homes will start in the low 400,000s. The single-family homes will have 3 to 4 bedrooms, 2-car garages, and range from 2,300 to 3,100 square feet. Kim Mulder, Director of Land Acquisitions and Entitlements for Davidson's Homes, says the home builder has started land development and will start vertical construction in spring of 2025. Full build-out will take about 2 years. Wendell Ridge will have a dog park, walking trails, gathering space, and open space. The builder plans to connect the walking trails to the Turnip Seed Nature Preserve and Lake Myra County Park. And now let's turn to this week's cover story. Where's the funding? As women turn into entrepreneurs, raising capital remains a challenge. The cover article written by Lauren Onosorch. For Julie Lynn, the stakes for success have never been higher. Green Rabbit Plants, the retail startup she co-founded with her husband Will, gets its first storefront in Raleigh's North Hills in April. It's a micro-lease company such as hers often find more approachable as it doesn't lock a tenant in for a decade. But something strange happened when she called for vendor quotes. The prices, she says, were insane. When her husband called, however, suddenly the price tags dropped. It's just kind of wild to me, the discrepancy, Lynn says. Nearby in Raleigh, another female entrepreneur was recently handed a prestigious honor, one that could put DIA, a startup working to use wearables to save lives, in front of even more investors. It was the Rice Business Plan Competition, billed as the world's largest and richest intercollegiate student startup competition, where real-world pitching is the main event. But instead of soaking in the visibility, co-founder Sloan Tilley found the judges' comments echoing in her skull. While some judges were absolutely lovely, not a small number of them made comments that overshadowed Tilley's entire experience, comparing her to convicted entrepreneur Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos, or telling her she needed to be careful not to come across as overconfident, a line accompanied by a drawn smiley face. I know for a fact that males who had extremely similar companies and value props to ours did not get those comments, Tilly says. While those two startup stories are different, both ring true for female entrepreneurs throughout the Triangle. Dozens of female entrepreneurs interviewed by Triangle Business Journal say they are often told to smile, but not too much. They're told to be confident, but not bossy. And when they get sexist pushback, sometimes the message is to just take it. After all, with valuations across the board tanking, many in the industry say it's harder than ever to secure venture capital. It's a problem that's not unknown. In 2022, companies founded exclusively by women secured just 2.1% of the total capital invested in venture-backed startups in the United States, according to data released by PitchBook. While deal count has grown from 5.6% in 2019 to 7.1% in 2023, total capital actually decreased. It was 2.6% in 2019. Despite the visibility of the problem, the numbers just aren't improving. In 2017, deal flow by female-founded or co-founded companies was just under 5,000 deals and $61.5 billion invested in the U.S. Last year, PitchBook counted just over 3,000 deals with $31.2 billion invested, a sizable decline. And that's amid the rise in remote work, flexibility that some entrepreneurs say has helped them close the deal. Cameron Hardesty, founder of a tech-enabled florist startup called Poppy, has gone through two pitching rounds while pregnant. Thanks to pandemic profiles, both pitch tours happened primarily online, and Hardesty didn't have to disclose anything below her shoulders. There were times where I was really reticent to bring it up, she says. Hardesty, whose investors include Chapel Hill's Idea Fund partners, even pitched on her due date, and the stress was immense. She remembers talking to Chris Lankford, who led Idea Fund Partners' investment in Poppy, and being told to use it as a filter. If you're talking to an investor who doesn't want to invest in you because you're pregnant and have a family, you don't want to work with that person anyway, Hardesty says. It's a similar sentiment to what other female entrepreneurs say. But many admit it's hard to take when the capital is make or break for the company you built with your life savings. Sue Meekum, co-founder of NALA Membranes, which recently closed on $1.2 million, says it's impossible to know why people decide not to invest. As a technical founder working on a disruptive, albeit complex, water purification technology, she has fielded many questions about her ability to run a company. It's hard to know how much being a woman impacts that one way or another, Meacham says. It's a matter of the picture they have in their minds. I don't fit that picture. So it's really important as a woman entrepreneur, we have to establish skills that we have. We can't be people that we aren't. Meekum hopes that over time people will see it's not just one type of person who can be successful in this environment. Women make up half the population, including the customers many startups seek. And in some cases, that's been a secret sauce for founders like Tiny Earth Toys, whose founder has pivoted from a toy subscription startup to a toy retail startup. Being a mom has only helped co-founder Rachel Classy fine-tune her strategy. Minnie Marwaha, who founded Debo to make healthcare friendlier for kids, wouldn't have a startup at all without her family, as ear infections that wouldn't quit inspired her to create a pediatric device. Debo, which recently launched in Raleigh, markets otoscopes in approachable colors that come with toy versions so kids can better understand what's happening in a doctor's office. But with statistics working against female startups, it's a tough road convincing investors to get engaged. Susie Welch, a New York University professor and entrepreneur, says the reality is that women face tough choices and that succeeding doesn't require apologizing. She remembers delivering a brutal message to her own kids. I love you very much, but someday you will be gone and I will still be here and I want to have a career and a life after you're gone, she says. It's okay to prioritize your career and it's okay to prioritize your family. It just can't always happen at the same time, and that's okay too, says Welch, the widow of GE leader Jack Welch. The hard part is convincing investors, and it looks like that will continue to be challenging in the years ahead. Tom Barkin, CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, Virginia, says the situation for the overall workforce is steadily improving. COVID-19 hit workforce participation hard, particularly as child care centers and schools shut down. But hybrid working has accelerated participation so that it's now higher than it was pre-COVID, he says. It has also inspired startups. Classy, the founder of Tiny Earth Toys, was home during the pandemic when she noticed the accumulation of plastic toys in her house and decided to do something about it. Times of disruption often lead to an increase in startup activity, after all, but 2024 is expected to be a particularly challenging year amid continuing valuation challenges. Late-stage startups across the board grew by a median of $6.6 million between funding rounds in 2023, down nearly 62% year-over-year, PitchBook notes. That dash for dollars leaves many women wondering if, in this environment, their big ideas will land the capital it needs. The Editor's Notebook column is written by Managing Editor Sugata Mukherjee. The next frontier to profits for firms, loyalty programs. On March 12th, Target Corp. announced the giant retailer is launching a membership program for customers that will include same-day delivery, discounted goods, and yet-to-be-announced benefits for a $99 annual fee. Just the day before, American Airlines announced that it would beef up its offerings and incentives for frequent flyer passengers and first-class passengers, as it expects to generate 80% of its annual margins from those demographics. That was just this week. Several other companies have launched loyalty programs this year, following the likes of Amazon and Walmart with their own loyalty programs that have been in place for a while. So what's going on? Businesses are spending too much money trying to generate new customers while customers' churn is reaching new highs. Your business is likely noticing the same. The process can often be exhausting, especially for small and medium-sized businesses that lose a large chunk of business. So the new, actually not so new, strategy for businesses hoping for a reliable customer base to generate a recurring revenue stream is this: create a membership program and spend more on those customers by offering them larger discounts, easier access, live customer service instead of a recording is just one benefit, and encouraging them to spend more on new products and services. What this means is that companies are spending way too much on customer acquisition, when in reality they should be spending the most on their most reliable and profitable customers. In the past couple of years, even our company has started a membership program and noticed far better margins than customers who come and go for just one product or service. Only some people are going to be successful, however. If you want a loyal customer to stick with you, ensure the benefits are noticeable. Cutting corners on them will make it worse. Not only will these businesses leave you, but they also will make sure their friends and other business partners know about your disjointed loyalty membership programs. According to a 2021 McKinsey & Company study, customers who join loyalty programs are 64% more likely to purchase from that company multiple times, 50% more likely to recommend it to a friend, and 31% will pay more to shop with that brand. But think about it. Suppose more and more customers stick to the same company and there is less churn of customers across all sectors. In that case, thousands of businesses will likely go out of business because the pool of whale customers will drop dramatically. The fight for customers will cause them to morph into whatever is delivering more incentives for the customer to be loyal to one brand. I assume product quality and performance will always come first when businesses make choices. Hopefully it does not depend on who offers free U.S. Open tickets or a lavish weekend stay during the Super Bowl, but who knows? Chances are businesses will start customizing loyalty programs for customers. It sounds like a lot of work for a billion-dollar-plus enterprise, but look at it this way. It will create a need for a new skill set for workers interested in branding, marketing, data personalization, customer instinct, and behavioral science. This will not be a job for liberal arts. This will be a science job. While it is exciting, it is also terrifying for businesses behind the curve. That's because their competitors are breathing down their necks with innovative programs to hold on to their customers. This week's 52 Shades of Success, the Latino influence, headline, A Push to Color Money. Startup founders looking for financing had a couple of flush years in 2021 and 2022 when venture capitalists invested more than $1 trillion globally across the 2 years, roughly $687 billion and $435 billion per year, according to S&P Global Market Intelligence. But in the U.S., even when money seemed to flow freely, companies led by women, Latino, or black founders were rarely on the receiving end. VC allocations in the U.S. neared $239 billion in 2022, but over 95% of that money went to entrepreneurial ventures led by white men, according to reports from Morgan Stanley and McKinsey & Company. White women women, tallied just 1.9% of the VC investments in 2022. Latino men got 1.5%, black men received 1%, and Latina or black women got a paltry 0.1%. And that was in those lucrative years. VC investing dropped dramatically in 2023 to $260 billion globally, so funding for underrepresented founders in the U.S. has become an even bigger focal point for venture capitalists such as Lister Delgado, co-founder and managing partner at Idea Fund Partners. I've been doing this for 24 years, and for the first 15 to 18 years of doing venture capital, I did not know other Latino venture capitalists and very few Latino entrepreneurs. But recently that has started to change, says Delgado, who moved to Miami from Peru when he was 17. I feel a responsibility to open up to invest more in underrepresented entrepreneurs. Historically, his firm, which launched in 2007, has made roughly 30% of its investments in entrepreneurial startups led by women, Latinos, or blacks. Now he says they're aiming to make half of its investments with underrepresented founders. The decision to channel their funds in this way is partly because of that sense of responsibility, but it's also because of the opportunity it presents. If you look at the number of founders who are women, black, or Latino, and you look at the number of dollars they've received, it's just way off, but not because they're less successful, Delgado says. In the region where he centers much of his focus, from Baltimore through Atlanta, he's seen 39 unicorns emerge from VC-funded startups over the last 5 years, and four of those were led by underrepresented founders. That's like 10%, but they got maybe 2% of the money. So there's definitely an imbalance, and we see both a moral obligation and an opportunity. It wouldn't work otherwise, Delgado says. We're not an impact fund or there just for the social impact. There's an opportunity to make concerted investments in underrepresented founders and to do it not just to be nice, but to make money. That mindset, equal parts mission-driven and pragmatic ROI, appealed to Claudia Name Burt, co-founder and chief operating officer at Keep Company, a tech startup based in Bethesda, Maryland, that helps organizations quantify, support, and retain employees who are caregivers at home. When Keep Company started at the beginning of 2022, Name Burt says she and her co-founder Adrienne Prentice initially had trouble raising money. I had an awareness of how few women raised venture capital and knew the number was under 2%, says Name Burt, who came to the D.C. area from Caracas, Venezuela when she was 5 years old. My co-founder and I often heard that women raise smaller rounds through more checks. There are a couple of layers of impact to that. One is female-founded businesses tend to be undercapitalized, so they aren't able to grow as fully and quickly. And two, it makes the process of raising money much more inefficient because we're having to chase many more small checks. They found that to be true in the pre-seed round of funding in their first year when they raised $800,000, and now they're in the process of closing out a seed round where Idea Fund Partners is one of the largest investors. One of the things that drew us to Lister is that he understands the mission of what we're doing, and he also understands the bottom line impact of businesses of overlooking this very large segment of the workforce, says Name Burt, noting that an estimated 73% of employees are balancing work responsibilities while caring for someone at home. Idea Fund invests in technology innovation and typically in the early startup phases. We tend to gravitate early, so pre-seed, pre-revenue to a little bit of revenue, and up to a Series A, like a company with a couple of $1 million in revenue, Delgado says. Delgado and Name Burt had met in 2021 when Idea Fund was an investor in Poppy Flowers, another woman-led startup where Name Burt served as a brand advisor. Professional connections are critical in the world of raising venture capital, and Delgado says the biggest barriers preventing underrepresented founders from having more access to VC funding are a lack of networks and a lack of role models, particularly in places like North Carolina. When the people who are providing the capital don't look like you, you get intimidated, and that's whether you're a woman or a black or a Latino entrepreneur. It's intimidating. You don't know how to break through or how to connect, and venture capital in particular is about connecting. It's not always about a great idea, he says. Those are the biggest obstacles entrepreneurs have to overcome. It's not a complete meritocracy. A lot of it has to do with who you know. Delgado has expanded his own network to other investors around the country, particularly those investing in Latino founders. He's a member of Angeles Investors in Chicago and has partnered with others, including Vamos Ventures, Mendoza Ventures, and Inicio Ventures. Although there was a significant Hispanic population when he came to the state in 1998, professionally speaking, it's been difficult to find people that look like me and have similar stories, Delgado says. The 52 Shades of Success, The Latino Influence, explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by those in the Latin American community from all across the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. This 52-week project will also dive into important trends and issues relating to the DEI sector. Triangle Business Journal has a guest column this week, Ruth Gratzky. She says, let's supercharge North Carolina's workforce. For every 100 job openings here in North Carolina, just 55 workers are available to fill them. That's according to a newly published report from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce on nationwide workforce shortages, which marked North Carolina's worker deficit as more severe. While the state is brimming with innovation and economic opportunity, including in the growing clean energy space, we need to keep focusing on creating the jobs of the future and investing in a workforce to fill those jobs. Fortunately, the state is taking big steps to meet this moment. Programs like My Future NC are crucial to progressing this agenda. My Future NC is a cross-sector initiative that aims to help 2 million North Carolinians achieve high-quality credentials or post-secondary degrees by 2030. The program seeks to provide prospective workers with the skills and opportunities to meet employer needs, helping to fill the workforce gap in supply chain, manufacturing, information technology, and more. At Siemens, we're proud to be a committed partner in helping to build our workforce here in North Carolina. This past year, the Siemens Foundation, in partnership with the North Carolina Business Committee for Education, launched the Everyone Charging Forward initiative. The workforce investment will help to create pathways for individuals from underserved and underrepresented communities to well-paying, sustainable technical jobs in the EV charging sector. We have been encouraged by the impressive innovation that is happening right here in North Carolina and is continuing to create job opportunities for our workforce. When it comes to clean energy, in the last year alone, over 14,100 jobs and billions in investment have flooded into the state from companies like Forge Nano, VinFast, and Bosch. North Carolina is an epicenter for Siemens' own clean energy operations and investments, serving as a pivotal hub for the development of our cutting-edge technologies. This progress is being accelerated by demand, a demand fueled by smart federal tax policy that enables our customers to scale up their operations here in the U.S., and its impact is already being seen and felt locally. Alongside housing, our smart infrastructure initiatives, mobility research and development, North Carolina has also recently become a manufacturing hub for the East Coast Rail. Last fall, we broke ground on our advanced railway manufacturing facility in Lexington. However, sustaining this momentum in developing the state's workforce and continuing to spur economic growth in North Carolina requires continued commitment. As of today, North Carolina's labor force participation rate remains below the national average of 62.8%. It's essential that we continue investing in our communities and workers through programs like My Future NC and smart federal tax policies that bolster our economy, creating diverse pathways to good-paying jobs like those in the clean energy space, and providing the skills-based learning for the workforce to fill them. From leading energy breakthroughs to building the future of the American workforce, Siemens is proud to be a part of the innovations here in North Carolina that are meeting the challenges and demands of the future. And Ruth Gratzky is the president of Siemens Smart Infrastructure U.S. and CEO of Siemens Industry, Inc. We have time for a news item or two. Court rules against Lindbergh. After years of regulatory limbo, policyholders of companies tied to embattled entrepreneur Greg Lindbergh could see their money as soon as this summer. On March 5th, a three-judge panel of the North Carolina Court of Appeals ruled against Lindbergh's company, Global Growth, which was trying to delay liquidation of multiple insurance firms under its umbrella. The ruling upheld a lower court's order to deny Global Growth intervener status in the case. Lindbergh has been involved in multiple lawsuits relating to his control of a group of insurance companies. The latest appeal was an order from 2022 by Judge Graham Shirley in Wake County Superior Court. Lindbergh's company, formerly known as Eli Global, had appealed two rulings, one denying its motion for a continuance and another tied to the judge's liquidation ruling against Bankers Life Insurance Company and Colorado Bankers Life Insurance Company. It's the liquidation order that could make the biggest impact, as without it, policyholders are stuck in regulatory limbo. A liquidation order kicks in the state's guarantee association, which protects policyholders up to a legislatively mandated cap. For most states, that means at least $250,000 in annual annuity benefits. While it's not the full sum of what many policyholders have invested in annuities tied to Lindbergh's companies, it's a start. Multiple policyholders have said their retirement funds are inaccessible until the liquidation process runs its course. North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey calls the recent ruling a well-reasoned decision. Unless Lindbergh's team appeals again, the liquidation order will become effective June 30th, and state guarantee associations will begin the process of paying back policy claims. Of course, Mr. Lindbergh can try to push that date back by continuing to pursue meritless appeals, Causey says. My sincere hope is that he does not and finally ends this nightmare that he created for policyholders. In response to Causey's statement, Lindbergh's spokeswoman says Global Growth had multiple offers to purchase these companies for hundreds of millions of dollars. All the NCDOI has to do is approve one of these offers, and the companies can be sold and policyholders can access their full policy benefits, the spokeswoman says. Wes Camden, an attorney with Williams Mullen working with NCDOI, says there have been no feasible proposals to purchase the insurance companies. The sole offer filed with the NCDOI, which was later withdrawn, was made by an individual on Mr. Lindbergh's payroll, he says. Another news item, apartments could replace offices in Blue Ridge Corridor. An office building in a hot corridor of Raleigh could be replaced with apartments and retail space. Northwood Raven is applying for a rezoning for 2500 Blue Ridge Road near UNC Rex Hospital to go from 3 to 7 stories. The developer wants to replace the 3-story office building on the property with a 7-story multifamily development with ground floor retail. The office building is within the Rex Woods Office Center. The proposed zoning for the 3.62-acre site is neighborhood mixed use up to 7 stories with conditions. The current zoning is office mixed use up to 3 stories. Conditions proposed for the rezoning would prohibit certain uses and cap the residential units at 260 and the commercial space at 5,000 square feet. Exact details of the development are unclear, as Northwood Raven did not respond to requests for comment. The company bought the building from Highwoods Properties for $7.5 million at the beginning of February, according to Wake County deed records. Highwoods was the originator of the rezoning. The rezoning application submitted by Northwood Raven indicates the building would be torn down to make way for a new development. Highwood still owns the remaining 7 buildings within the Rex Woods Office Center campus. Investment and development within the Blue Ridge Corridor have been heating up. A local physicians group bought its recently completed medical office building on Blue Ridge Road for $17 million, while the Novo Blue Ridge Apartments at the southern end of Blue Ridge Road sold for $73.65 million. For the property at 2500 Blue Ridge Road, Northwood Raven says in the rezoning application it is looking to redevelop an underutilized site by adding more height and density. It wants small-scale commercial amenities for the retail portion. The Class B office building was built in 1982 and renovated in 2016. It is 48% occupied, according to LoopNet. It has 61,630 square feet of medical office space. Some of the current tenants are an oral surgeon, home health care service, and an emergency room. The total assessed value of the property is approximately $12 million. The quotables this week. For us, it means we can hire more instructors to increase student capacity in the areas where there's big job demand. That's Wake Tech President Scott Rawls on a new funding model approved by the State Board of Community Colleges. The model, if approved by lawmakers, prioritizes programs focused on critical workforce sectors. Community is powerful, and when I think of what our city would look like when women truly connect, feel less alone in their struggles, and are supported in community, I see a future where we are an unstoppable force for good. That's Emily Gray, on moving the Flourish Market from downtown Raleigh to Raleigh Iron Works. Mumford Park is our firm's 30th industrial investment, 12th small bay industrial venture, and second business park in Greenville. That's Watson Bryant, partner with Stout Ventures of Raleigh on the acquisition of a roughly 30-acre industrial park in Pitt County, formerly owned by the Greenville Utilities Commission. We're optimistic that we will get the project, Downtown South, started in 2024. While challenges still exist, Raleigh remains attractive to investors, and Downtown South is positioned well to capitalize on the significant interest in our market. That's Bonner Gaylord, the Chief Operating Officer of Kane Realty Corp. The big numbers this week, $6 million. That's how much Avicenna Biosciences recently raised, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The Durham biotechnology startup could look to add more, with the total offering amount set at $10 million. $3.9 million. That's how much a Golden Corral restaurant in Raleigh was sold for in February. The property was sold to a local franchisee, though, for less than its assessed value of $4.5 million. The restaurant is at 3551 Grinnell Street, just off South Wilmington Street. 335. The revised number of single-family homes Hopper Communities is proposing for its Vinson Road subdivision in Clayton after local elected leaders raised concerns about its density compared to surrounding areas. $60.5 million. That's how much the recently opened Conclave Glenwood Apartments off Glenwood Avenue near Crabtree Valley Mall sold for to Alden Management of Maryland, according to Wake County Deed Records. Well, the hour seemed to fly by today. I hope it didn't drag on too much for anybody listening. We have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.